Coming up, another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a good one today with Dan Titus talking about basically everything happening in the NBA. It was a loaded weekend. Coach getting fired. Big trade between the Lakers and the Nets. Fights in the NBA. Let's talk about all that with Dan. And later on in the show, bringing on Bryce Simon for a deep dive into one of the surprises in the NBA this year. The Detroit Pistons, 14 and 18, matching their win total from last year already when they were 14 and 58, just absolutely horrendous. So I wanted to catch up with Bryce talking about the Pistons. That's coming up later. First, here's my conversation with Dan Titus. Joining me now is Dan Titus from YahooSports.com. Dan, how you doing today, man?
Doing great, KOC. How you feeling after that loss last night, man?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. The Patriots, I don't know which loss. A lot of losses. Patriots losing games. They're tied. They had the worst record in the NFL. I'm feeling good. A loss is a win for them. NBA teams now also starting to think about losses being wins. The Brooklyn Nets just tanking a game against the Orlando Magic after a trade they made with the Los Angeles Lakers. D'Angelo Russell back in Brooklyn alongside Maxwell Lewis and then second round picks from the Lakers in 27, 30, and 31. And then the Lakers, that we'll talk about them first here, they get Dorian Finney-Smith and Shake Milton in the trade. Dan, I love this trade for the Lakers. Getting Dorian Finney-Smith is a huge acquisition for them because they're trading a streaky scoring guard who is trying to be like a stabilizing playmaker for them coming off the bench for a steady 3-and-D guy. You're getting Dorian Finney-Smith, who's 6'7", 7-foot wingspan, competitive, versatile on-ball defender. This dude defends across positions. If you look at the players, he's defended 30 or more possessions this season. The list is Jaren Jackson Jr., Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Giannis, Jokic, Brook Lopez. That's centers, that's guards, that's forwards. He defends everybody, and so you add him to this Lakers team that it feels like they want to be bigger. J.J. Redick moves Max Christie to the starting lineup. He's been really great for them recently. You got him defending on the perimeter, hitting threes, and now you add Dorian Finney-Smith into the mix. Whether he comes off the bench or whether he's in the starting lineup, maybe over Rui or over Christie, I don't think it matters. He's going to be a finishing player for this Lakers team that suddenly feels a hell of a lot bigger than they were with D'Lo.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it, because I mean, when was D'Lo really in favor for the Los Angeles Lakers? The guy was a starter. He had this roller coaster ride throughout the regular season. Last year, he played well. He falls by the wayside in the playoffs. And I think that that type of volatility just has no place given the state of where the Lakers are at. And J.J. Redick has long coveted DFS. He played with him right before he retired in the Dallas Mavericks. This guy is having a career year in terms of shooting, highest true shooting percentage of his career. He's knocking down 43% of his three. That will likely regress. He's a career 36% guy, but I mean, he's just playing very well. And I think that it's a point where the fact that there was other suitors on the market that tried to offer the Brooklyn Nets a pretty considerable offer, this guy was highly wanted around the league. And I think that the Lakers did a good job of shoring up their defense, getting a guy that can guard multiple positions. Their defense has been lacking. We know how much LeBron takes those plays off. So it's great to have a nice defensive stopper on there that can possibly play against some of the threes, some of the fours, and potentially some small ball five, as Jackson Hayes has been injured and, you know, the Lakers going through some attrition in their front court. So I think it just makes them more well-rounded. This is a good trade. And I think by giving up three second round picks, this still leaves the door open for them to make a big splash, packaging potentially Gabe Vincent's contract, Rui Hachimura potentially, or, you know, depending on the state of Jared Vanderbilt, maybe they can trade him as a part of the piece to match salary for a bigger haul.
I mean, 100%, you're spot on. This deal allows them to continue to make more moves if there's moves to be made ahead of the deadline because of all those salaries, very tradable salary numbers for all of those guys in like the $10 to $17 million range. So now they have multiple firsts they can trade in the future. They have multiple swaps they can trade. I mean, depending on what you think about Jalen Hood-Schifino, maybe someone wants to take a swing at him and see if they can get something out of him. He showed flashes in the G League last year. So there's pieces there for the Lakers to continue to bolster this roster and at least go for it. I mean, they've had success against OKC. Like, they're a big team, and they've done well against OKC. So I think for the Lakers, granted, OKC looks to be the clear favorite in the West. I mean, who knows in a seven-game series? And so for them, I'm glad they seem to be going for it here, because why would you not, with AD still playing at the level he is? Why would you not, with LeBron still playing at the level that he is, especially after his 10-day break? And so, you know, DFS, like you mentioned, his three-point percentage, career, 36%. That's true. But he's been a 42% guy in the playoffs in his career. Last six seasons, he's been 37.5%. So even with some regression, he's been a guy that's had success in big playoff games. And so I think those sample sizes are smaller, but they matter, because, you know, there's certain players who are like Finney Smith, 37.5% last six seasons in the NBA, but then they fall to 31% in the playoffs when closeouts are tighter, defenses are more locked in, the pressure is greater, the crowd is louder, the lights are brighter. Finney Smith has gotten better. And so for the Lakers, I don't think he's going to be one of those classic Laker acquisitions that he becomes a 32% guy all of a sudden. I think Lakers can probably feel good about that. And I think for J.J. Redick, considering his relationship with Finney Smith as former teammates together in Dallas, as you mentioned, that probably will help him figure out what's best for the culture of this team, with whether he starts or whether he comes off the bench. Because that was a challenge with D'Lo. D'Lo is a guy that, he likes to get heavy minutes. He likes to get touches. And he's one of those guys that plays with flow, that it helps him. And I think that showed in the numbers this year. He had the worst true shooting percentage in his last 7 years, only 10.7 shots per game, only 26.3 minutes per game. And I think that dip in efficiency, especially from three, probably had something to do with the lower minutes, the lack of flow that he had. But that had to be done. Like, it had to be done for the Lakers. Max Christie's playing well. They got him starting, and now you had Finney Smith into that mix. This Lakers team just feels a lot more complete. They feel like a team that can play small. They've been second in defensive rating since December 7th. They've really turned it on after starting the year 26th on defense. This just feels like a more complete team to me, but it's always still about, well, then what's next though? Do you think, when you look at this Lakers roster, Dan, what do you feel like is missing? Like, what should they be targeting with those existing picks and assets that they have?
I think that they could aim for, like, you know, because Jeremy Grant was long, you know, tied to the Lakers, but I think that they should actually be going for some scoring, because I think that that's the one area where I think this trade kind of hurts them, in the sense of, you know, at least you had D'Lo providing 15, 16 points off the bench. Is Dalton Connect ready to step up into that role? Max Christie, you know, we talked about, we don't know really what that rotation is going to look like. So if you go get someone that's affordable, like an Anthony Simons, maybe you can get in the Zach LaVine sweepstakes. You at least can match some salary with that to try to make a big splash like that, because I think that that's the one thing that the Lakers are missing. They need a third star. Dorian Finney-Smith is the third player that has a BPM over zero. So that means that everyone else has been pretty much a net negative for the Lakers this year besides LeBron and AD. So getting Dorian Finney-Smith in there was a huge plus, but I think you need to get another ball handler, another scorer, somebody that can just take over a game, potentially give you anywhere between 18 to 20 points on a given night, because that's going to raise this floor for this team and then also give them another reliable option when it comes to playoff time once this season starts to wear down.
I mean, the Zach LaVine fit, I mean, to me, I think, like, if you get Zach LaVine, you have to trade Rui in that deal. $17 million filler, you'd have to do it. Finney Smith makes Rui more expendable, right?
For sure.
So that would work for the Lakers. It'd have to be like a 5-for-1. Salary-wise, it would have to be Rui, Gabe Vincent, Jared Vanderbilt, Hood Schifino, and then one more. So it'd have to be a three-team deal. You know, maybe there's a team, you know, like the Pistons, somebody like that. These teams that are sort of in the middle that could take on a player that they could use in the future or something like that. Or these teams that might want to take salary. Maybe you go back to Brooklyn and they take somebody else line. But I to me, LaVine, with the way he's performed this year, every team in the league missed the chance to get him on a discount. It's gone. You can't get him on a discount anymore. He's not damaged goods at this point. He's just an expensive salary, but he's a hell of a player. And he fits exactly what the Lakers need. Because you think about D'Lo versus Zach LaVine, there's that spark they both provide, but D'Lo's almost always that on-ball guy. It comes out of pick and roll and isolations, ice in his veins, pointing after, you know, icing, hitting a big three. LaVine, it can come off of screens. It can come off of handoffs. It can come off of lob dunks at the rim and the on-ball stuff. And so if you pair that with AD in the years to come and with LeBron today, LaVine's expensive as hell, dude. But like Finney Smith fills what you had hoped to get from Vanderbilt. He makes Rui more expendable. To me, LaVine's gonna be like at the top of the list for the expensive salary guys. But like that's tough. Like midseason, a 5-for-1. I mean, that's tough to pull off in the middle of the year, though.
It's tough, but I mean, I feel like at this point, the Lakers are doing everything to kind of indicate that that's where they're headed. You know, the fact that they had the picks and they still got those three firsts, man. That's an attractive thing in this market. And I don't know, just the going rate of Zach LaVine might be pretty expensive, but if you're trying to keep this window open, man, it's getting DFS is a good start. It's not the finish, but I think you're in a good place going forward here.
Sure. And Anthony Simons at $25 million, a lot more affordable, just not the level of player that Zach LaVine is. The Grizzlies, they had made a great offer for Finney Smith. They missed out on him. Michael Scotto reported that the final offer from the Grizzlies was a top 15 protected pick in 2025. Luke Kennard and John Conchar for Finney Smith and second round pick considerations. And what I've been told is that the Nets didn't want to do that because they didn't want to give up second round picks. And also they just preferred the Lakers deal.
I'm about to say, they're like looking at the Lakers future. They're like, nah, give me that. I'll take that over the way the Grizzlies are building right now.
We'll take those second round draft picks instead of a top 15 protected first. No, thank you. And so
the Grizzlies, a good draft too. Like that's pretty telling.
Exactly. I mean, I think the Nets made the right decision very clearly, and they get an expiring salary in the deal as well with D'Lo. So I think for the Nets, it makes sense. For the Grizzlies, though, they miss out here. They're an interesting team right now. They're 22-11. They're 5 games back from the Thunder. They've had a really great stretch this last month or so. They beat the Celtics on the road. They destroyed the Warriors by 51 points, but they also lost to the Lakers. They lost to the Clippers, and a lot of their wins were against bad teams. Their next 10 games, they face the Suns on New Year's Eve. They get 2 games against the Rockets, 2 games against the Wolves, 2 games against the Spurs. They also face the depleted Mavs without Luka, and they face the Kings, who just fired their head coach, as we'll talk about. The Grizzlies, what do you make about them? Is this actually a loss for them not to acquire Finney Smith? Or do you think it could actually end up being a blessing in disguise for this team that is still kind of in this position of figuring out what they need?
I mean, I don't know that I would say it was a blessing in disguise. I mean, the first round pick certainly matters. You know, that's a huge opportunity next year in a good draft. But I think that they actually could have used Dorian Finney-Smith. Like that would have been a nice floor raising opportunity for them to get a ball stopper that can guard multiple positions. We already said all the great things about DFS and what he provides. But I think it's really just a testament to, like, I think the Memphis Grizzlies are just a really solid team that's well coached. The way that they continue to be resilient through all these injuries and still finding a way to be a top seed in the Western Conference. I mean, Ja Morant, to surprise of no one, is hurt again. Scottie Pippen Jr. continues to just be one of the more valuable backups. Kind of reminds me of the way Tyus Jones was when he had his stint in Memphis, where he was just a gritty defender, can be a playmaking guard off the bench and still provide the scoring and the playmaking and defense that you need to kind of keep it going. But Desmond Bane hasn't been playing particularly well, and he's starting to come on a little bit more. Jaren Jackson Jr. has been having a good season. So I don't know. I think that there's still a lot of room for opportunity. Like, just because you miss out on DFS doesn't mean you can't go looking at other deals and possible moves in the trade market here. So I don't know. I think that they're actually in a pretty good spot. They still have their draft capital here, and they're ready to make moves. And I think John Conchar and Luke Kennard are two guys that, you know, two shooters and solid players that could be bench depth or, you know, rotational spots for other teams. So I think that they do still have some ability to make some moves here.
Yeah, I think for the Grizzlies, like, I don't think you're going to get somebody at the level of Finney Smith. They don't have somebody who does what he does, and that's why they obviously liked him. but they still have their assets and they still have the ability to make other moves. And for them, I think this next 10 games or so, as we approach the deadline, those different types of opponents they're going to be facing, completely different teams. I think it'll be a good barometer test for them to show, okay, how real are we as a contender? Like, what are we going to do against Kevin Durant when we face Phoenix? How is it going to look for us against San Antonio with Victor? How is it going to look for us against the Warriors with their different attackers? What's it going to look like against Anthony Edwards? So I think for Memphis, this is still an evaluation period. And Finney Smith, as much as he fits on any team in the league, he's not alone turning you into a contender. He's not that piece. And the Grizzlies already have a bunch of good role players. What they're missing
is Vince Williams, he's going to be coming back in time. Exactly. G.G. Jackson's going to be back in time. Yes. So they have guys waiting in the wings here.
100%. They have acquisitions to come. Kind of like everybody talks about, well, Chet Holmgren's going to be the big acquisition for the Thunder. Well, the Grizzlies have some. G.G. Jackson's a pretty good acquisition. He was awesome to close last season. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's like every player comes back differently from injury, but
sure. Maybe
he's the type of guy who comes back guns blazing. And no pun intended, John Morant. And he just comes back and he's. That's not the right pun for the Grizzlies. I apologize. Ja Wick. I still think it's funny. I still think it's hilarious. But for Memphis, they missed out on Finney Smith, but I'm not, you know, losing sleep about it if I'm a Grizzlies fan. The Nets, we got to talk about that side of the deal. They're trading players away. They trade Schroeder to the Warriors. They trade Finney Smith. Mark Stein said on his Substack that he's heard the Nets want multiple first-round picks for Cam Johnson. I believe that to be very accurate. The Nets clearly are a team that are selling. They're 12-20 on the year, only the seventh best lottery odds. They completely blow the game to Orlando on Sunday. Magic finished with a 22-4 run in the game. It was just an absolute glorious tank job by the Brooklyn Nets. I was impressed.
Hey, they're finally figuring out how to do it, man. Because like with Schroeder, they were winning too many games. So like, all right, and Cam Thomas is back now. We got to figure this out, y'all. So yeah, I think that the subtraction is certainly going to start helping their cause here.
Yeah, I mean, I think they need to continue subtracting, though, because, I mean, D'Lo could win you some games, too. He could. Yeah. So they need to continue subtracting in the weeks to come. But we'll see what they end up doing. That Magic comeback, though, I just want to touch on that real quick because I watched some of that back. I did not see it live. Watching it back, I was blown away by Tristan Da Silva. He finished the game with 21 points and 7 assists. And Cole Anthony rightfully is getting credit. He hits the game-winning floater to beat the Nets. He's been a spark for them without Franz Wagner, without Paolo Banchero. But Da Silva looked like Franz Wagner in that game. He was running the offense. Final 2 minutes, he hit a clutch three-pointer off of a play that he set up. He made a gorgeous cut on a give-and-go with Goga. He assisted on the game-tying three. And then on the Cole Anthony game-winning floater, he kind of like cut towards his defender like a lead blocker, and he compared himself to Franz, I believe, before the season. I compared him to Kyle Anderson in my draft guide. He's looking more like Franz and less like Kyle Anderson. Like his size, his handling ability, his IQ, the shooting. I mean, like Da Silva looks like one of those potential guys without Franz for the rest of the year with his ACL injury, and Banchero, we'll see when he returns. Da Silva's looking like one of those guys that could be a real silver lining for this Magic team with kind of a lost season, but maybe a long-term win for them to get Da Silva all these touches.
Yeah, I think he's been playing really well. I don't know if I would say that he's going to have the role that he's playing now. I don't know that he's going to be playing this, you know, come March, right? Banchero is already reconditioning. He's going to be returning to the lineup probably early within the new year. Cole Anthony's play has been outstanding too. I mean, this guy was pretty much relegated to the bench, and the way that the Orlando Magic continue to just have these ridiculous 20-point comebacks, I think just speaks to the coaching of Jamal Mosley, man. Like, this dude just mm-hmm. coaches these guys up. I thought Tristan Da Silva was going to be a good rookie, but like, I think he was kind of forced into this position, right? And to get somebody motivated to play into this role, playing like a Franz Wagner down the stretch and carrying his team to victory, man, like, you don't expect these things out of rookies sometimes, especially where you got them drafted and you weren't, you know, especially with Franz and Paolo out. So I just think this speaks to how good the Magic are. Like, this is a real team that is going to be very scary in the playoffs once they actually have their team healthy, man. Yeah, I'm just, you know, Trevlin Queen, I think, has also been giving them really solid minutes. This team just has other guys ready to step up in the moment. I think that that just speaks to how good the Magic are right now.
A reminder to listeners, send me your 2025 NBA predictions to KOCshow@yahoosports.com. Pushing it to Friday show with Tom Haverstraw. We'll be talking about predictions for the coming year with him. So send us yours at KOCshow@yahoosports.com. All right, Dan, we had a bunch of NBA fights since my last episode.
Gotta get those ratings up, right? Come on, man. Let's get the ratings up.
I mean, this must be some type of ploy. We have Najee Marshall and Yusuf Nurkic both getting suspended for their, I mean, contact made on the face. You don't see that very often. Then Amen Thompson just body slamming Tyler Herro.
Ragdoll.
Oh my God. Just great drama. And you had this Herro quote after the game where he says, I guess that's what happens when someone's scoring, throwing dimes, doing the whole thing. I'd get mad too.
With the shades on and everything, yeah. Just ready for all the smoke, man.
It's the funniest thing. I love it too. And all of this fighting got me thinking about something earlier this season, a 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston. Joe Mazzulla, it was around a time of year when everybody's talking about rule changes for the NBA.
Yeah. And Mazzulla,
exactly. Mazzulla said the biggest thing we rob people from an entertainment standpoint, is you can't fight. We should bring back fighting. He said, you want to talk about robbing League of Entertainment? What's more entertaining than a little scuffle? And then this is a good point. He's not wrong.
But that's the funny thing about Mazzulla, is that he always has these genuine quotes where everyone thinks he's just like, oh, this is Mazzulla being Mazzulla. But like, he's kind of right. The NBA is more entertaining when you see people actually being physical, scrapping, having that emotion, playing to the emotion. All leagues need to let this just happen, man.
Exactly. Instead of, you know, giving a technical for a stare down. I mean, it's ridiculous. Right. And so he has a good point. He says, how come in baseball they're allowed to clear the benches? How come in hockey they're allowed to fight? And every time someone gets clubbed, you don't have to go to the monitor to see if a misdemeanor has been committed. And then he says this, which is true. I just don't get why some sports are allowed to clear the benches. They have bats and weapons. We don't. We just have a ball. Hockey has one of the hardest playing surfaces and pucks and sticks. And yet we're not allowed to throw down a little bit. I think the counter argument the NBA would have is, the fans are on the court.
Malice in the Palace.
It wasn't that's the counterpoint. However, he's not wrong about the weapons. Not wrong about the playing surface. Not wrong about the replay reviews and how long it takes. And we're seeing the Herro quote, the drama it adds, the rivalries it can create. I mean, we have no bad boy Pistons anymore.
No.
There's none of that. You can't allow that to be formed. There's no villains, in part, none. Because that's taken out.
Exactly. And I think
NBA? Who's the biggest villain? Is there a villain?
Dylan Brooks, maybe?
Dylan Brooks is like a phony villain.
Right.
He's not even a real villain.
But everybody's a phony. Like, everybody. Let me look at Jordan Clarkson. Always has his hands up, ready to go, square up at every moment. But he's never thrown anything. He never will. No one will. So this is why we need to, yes, this is a good thing for the league. I don't know how many games Amen Thompson's going to be suspended for, but he got his money's worth regardless.
That was a great body slam. It was very impressive. I've enjoyed the fights. It's entertaining. We also got some big news this weekend. Mike Brown from the Sacramento Kings was fired. And I'm shocked by the timing of this because of the $20 million remaining on his deal after he signed an extension last summer. Now, Kings fans know, listeners know how critical I've been of the Kings for years. Or even when they were this, you know, glorious, you know, the bright new story in the NBA, I was like, yeah, but I don't know if this is going to last. And I, at the time, I think Kings fans, understandably so, were like, you're just a hater. You're just a hater. This is a good thing. Not all teams need to be contending for championships. We'll have our time. And I'm like, I don't think you are going to have your time, though. I think it's going to get worse. And it has gotten worse.
This is a nice moment. Treasure it.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's important to treasure that moment, considering, in my opinion, how predictable it was that it would get worse. Now, I feel like it's at a point right now that it might be even a bit more worse than I anticipated because of the De'Aaron Fox situation with him possibly wanting out. You have Mike Brown being fired, Doug Christie being added. You have Sam Amick reporting that this was at The Athletic, that this was apparently Monte McNair, their GM's decision, that Vivek Ranadive, their owner, not really his decision. I don't know how much I believe that to be the case. Vivek definitely is very hands-on. I'm sure he had something to say there. You have Lou Williams on FanDuel TV saying that Mike Brown asked DeMar DeRozan to come off the bench and that players didn't really see eye to eye with Mike Brown. De'Aaron Fox pushed back on that on X. He responded saying that's not true. I don't necessarily believe Fox here. I think there's definitely been some pushback with Mike Brown. You have Michael Malone, head coach of the Nuggets, saying about Kings ownership, no class, no balls. He was previously fired by Vivek under similar circumstances early in the season. And that's why I'm not so sure if this is really all on McNair. To me, this is still an ownership issue for the Kings. The main thing is, though, Dan, firing Mike Brown does not fix the fact that you don't have rim protection. It does not fix the fact that you don't have perimeter stoppers. It does not fix the fact that you have lost your spark on the perimeter. You don't have reliable shooting. It doesn't fix the fact that Labonis has a limited defensive ceiling or that Fox is a shaky shooter. It doesn't fix any of this. And so with Brown, I was confused with some of his rotations this year. I'm still confused by the usage of Keon Ellis. That's just one of the issues I have. But Doug Christie's not going to change the roster. This team doesn't have depth. It doesn't have length. It doesn't have size. It doesn't have rim protection. It doesn't have reliable shooting. And the coach is just a scapegoat. That's all there is to it here. Mike Brown's just a scapegoat. Say what you want about him and how he may have lost the locker room, how he may have made some dumb decisions on the court as a coach, how the team has blown some leads. Doug Christie's not changing anything, and the Kings are still in the same old rotten position, stuck in the middle, and it's going to come down to what the front office does next with De'Aaron Fox. And to me, trading him needs to be, number one on the priority list. Fixing the team around him, getting a little younger. You get Devin Carter, who just exploded in the G League in his G League debut over the weekend. He's going to come back and just take a step back, try to retain your draft pick. But if Vivek ownership continues trying to press win, 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 get it right, it's bad news for the franchise, in my opinion. Very bad news.
Yeah, I mean, I think all this speaks. I mean, I don't have any disagreements with that. It's no notes. This is an organizational issue here. This is a systemic problem that, as Michael Malone was stating, shout to Mike, to Matt Moore for asking that great question and getting a candid response from him. But whether Vivek had any knowledge or input into this decision, it doesn't matter. The optics look horrible. You fire a guy on a way to an away game with no personal conversation. Organizations have to be accountable for just being good people at some point, right? And this is bad for business. This guy won Coach of the Year 2 years ago. You decided to acquire DeMar DeRozan. That was a choice. And you thought that you would just, be one of the clutchest teams in the NBA. Guess what? You've lost 9 games, the most in clutch situations this year. So I think this is a roster construction issue. This is a problem that De'Aaron Fox probably sniffed out earlier on. That's why he didn't want to sign the extension in the first place. So you're stuck with Sabonis. This guy is a nothing on defense. As you said, the rim protection sucks. Keegan Murray's development's been stifled because of DeMar DeRozan there. There's not enough space for him to operate and actually become what we expected him to become in this next season. So, yeah, I think there's just way more problems than answers. And firing your head coach at this point in the season, probably not the best idea to, right the ship. It's only going to get worse from here. And you called this out a month ago. I wasn't quite there yet. I still had some optimism. But, once you fire the head coach midseason after a tough loss that, frankly, was not on him, I'm sure that they went into the huddle. I was actually at the game, so I watched this implosion right in front of them.
Oh, wow, you were
and
there.
For De'Aaron Fox to not close out, get his guy, but then also to foul him, a shooter, that's not on the coach. That is bad execution. And sure, the coach is going to be the scapegoat in the end, but I think this is a bigger problem that just speaks to the lack of trust in the organization. All this stuff getting leaked and all the issues that are surrounding this, it's all bad for Sacramento. So I don't know what you do. The next move obviously has to get something for De'Aaron Fox while you can. You probably got to move off of Sabonis. Just I don't know where he fits for anybody because everyone, it's just obvious this guy is not a viable rim protector. And he's a system too. He's a hub. And that's very difficult for other players to get involved around that. So I don't know. All bad for Sacramento right now.
What was the vibe in the arena that night?
Oh, man.
Was it like a murder committed?
The funny thing was, it didn't seem like people were calling for Mike Brown's head. It was more about like, what is this team and like, how did this happen? Because this was like a slow draining death because it was like a 10 point advantage at halftime. Like Kings were cruising, the vibes were good. And then all of a sudden you just start seeing the fourth quarter like, oh, this is going left. We're going to lose. No, man, it was bad. It was bad.
On one hand, I feel really bad for Kings fans because 2 years ago, I mean, that was one of the funnest seasons. Like the team was incredibly fun.
Brought them back to relevance.
Yes. And Light the Beam was such an awesome gimmick. Like, I love it. It's fun. I would imagine if you're a young Kings fan, like that's something that makes you a Kings fan for sure. Like the rest of your life. Like, I can't imagine if that's your first year rooting for a team. It's just a cool thing as a fun team. And that crowd seems amazing as well. But on the other hand, I feel like there's like a little bit of like ignorance to the concerns over time. Cause like it was 2 years ago that I'm calling up some of the concerns I had with this franchise. I remember like on the mismatch before at the beginning of last season with Verno, I said, this is going to be the year it becomes apparent they need a front court player better than Sabonis or replace him with somebody who's significantly better. And it's like, no. Sabonis is great. He's an all-star player, borderline all-NBA. It's like, yeah, he is, but he has some pressing concerns that limit your ceiling as a team. And before this season, when I had Legend of Winning on, he's like, DeMar DeRozan, not a great fit. Maybe they have to ask him to come off the bench. And Kings fans jump down his throat. And they jump down my throat saying, you should never even have brought this guy on. That's what happened. Brown has wanted DeRozan to come off the bench because it was a poor fit. So it's like there's some of these concerns over time of many others. Those are just two that come to mind right away. Where it's like, maybe like some of this was coming, but it was like such a glorious year for Kings fans after decades of just being sad and depressing, wearing a bag over your head at games, that it's like, no, there's no way it's going to get bad again. But the signs were there. And that's where I'm concerned for where they go from here, because how does ownership feel? Is Vivek going to say, okay, we had a great moment with this core. Let's move on from Fox, possibly move on from Sabonis and build something new again, because I like some of their young players. I still like Keegan Murray. I'm in love with Devin Carter as a player. I think Kings fans are going to fall in love with Devin Carter. That dude at Providence the last few years, the way he's improved. Devin Carter, dude, he's a dog. Like defensively getting to the basket, he is a leader. Like for all the complaints about Fox not being a leader, lack of accountability, not being up there at his press conference for long after the game, not taking accountability in that moment after that game, Devin Carter is the opposite. He is a leader of men, and he was that in the college level, and I think he'll become that in the NBA. So I think the Kings still have some good things going for him. It's just a matter of what ownership and front office collectively do with these uncertainties on the team. And to me, trading Fox is the clear path forward for the best offer. Otherwise, I think he's going to walk in free agency when he hits in 2026, or he'll ask for a trade ahead of time and then he lose more leverage. But ultimately, you know, this on Monday morning, Ramona Shelburne said the Kings inquired about Zach LaVine, Brandon Ingram, Cam Thomas, Kyle Kuzma. That is the wrong way. That's the wrong path. Don't go down that path.
Let's get a whole bunch of players that are just not going to create that.
Dude, don't go that way. Just
literally every
Kings.
Wrong player that you could possibly probably try to target.
That's the wrong way. Don't go this path. I'm telling, like, Kings fans for years, Dan, Kings fans have said I'm the hater. I'm like, no, I'm trying to warn you it's going this way. I want you guys to feel joy. I want Kings fans to be happy. Like, this isn't a victory lap for me. This is like, I was right. Damn it. I was actually right about it. God. You don't want LaVine, Ingram.
No. Thomas, you definitely don't want Brandon Ingram. Like, what? Like, no. What are y'all doing? So if the Kings can find a good place for De'Aaron Fox, where would you like to see him land? San Antonio, maybe Orlando? Where do you think is a good place for De'Aaron Fox?
I don't want Orlando. I had a conversation with an executive the other night on the phone, and we were talking about, like, well, if they trade Fox, where should he go? And he's like, I think Orlando should go get him. I'm like, why? Like, they already have shooting concerns with Banchero and Franz.
Yeah.
Fox, same thing. So I don't like the fit for Orlando. I want like a knockdown elite shooter at point guard for Orlando. So not Orlando. To me, Rockets upgrade over Fred VanVleet. Like, that's an accelerator push for them right off the bat. In the Spurs, boy, Victor with Fox's speed. I get annoyed watching Chris Paul. He bugs me. I know he's helped Victor in some ways as the orchestrator of that offense, but he bugs the hell out of me. He's just too slow, slows down the offense. It really pisses me off. Fox, the speed aspect with Victor, that's what I want to see. A fast and fun team flying up and down the floor. And I think speed will make Victor even more dynamic. And so I think Spurs would be at the top of my, like, De'Aaron Fox dream destination list. And I mean, I still think, like, you talk about, you know, the Lakers, they're intriguing to me as well, because for all the reasons we talked about with Zach LaVine, the shooting ability makes him a bit more appealing than Fox. But Fox's playmaking with Anthony Davis, with LeBron and post LeBron, that playmaking ability is still important for the Lakers. And that's something that they could have for many years to come, you know, with AD and Fox. So Lakers would be up there on my list as well. Is there any preferred destination on your side of things for Fox?
Yeah, I had San Antonio, man. Like, I just think that De'Aaron Fox, to me, I think part of the struggles with Sacramento is that he's not a 1A, even though he's been treated as one. I think he needs to play alongside another star and not be the main dude. And if you're playing with Victor Wembanyama, you're not going to be the main dude. But I think he can unlock a different version of Wembanyama in a higher, faster-paced offense with all those weapons around, like Devin Vassell. Julian Champagny has been playing phenomenally well this year. I think that would just be a great spot. And also, he's from Texas, so I'm sure he wants to play a little bit closer to home. I think that there'd be a lot of pride there. And then also, I mean, it's another small market team. I don't know that he necessarily will go to a big market, but San Antonio is a good culture. And I think that that's, maybe we can see some of that leadership and some of the question marks around De'Aaron Fox kind of start to try to go the other direction in such a really good organization like the San Antonio Spurs. So, like, I think that would just be a great move for his career at this point, going from this, whatever the Sacramento Kings are, to the San Antonio Spurs and playing with a phenom like Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah. My understanding is he hasn't, like, requested a trade yet. I don't think it's gotten to that point from the conversations I've had with people around the league. But before last summer, there were, like, rumblings that a return to Texas could be something that Fox wanted if the King situation didn't pan out. There were just rumblings about that.
We're heading that way very quickly.
and I think very clearly those rumblings, you know, have percolated out with some other reporters out there as well. So wouldn't it surprise me if at some point we get a Shams, you know, ESPN sources say De'Aaron Fox has requested a trade with the Spurs and Rockets being his preferred destinations. That will not be a shocker if that happens sometime in the coming 5 or so weeks ahead of the trade deadline. But for the Kings, it would be a major bummer if it is the Spurs and you're just creating this potential annual contender in within your own conference, but you can't worry about the other team. Like, if your franchise can only worry about getting the best return for yourself.
Absolutely.
You can't like say, oh, we'll take less just because it's an Eastern Conference team. I mean, like, that's stupid. You need to take whatever the best offer is. And if the Spurs, who have, in my opinion, the best cupboard of assets in the NBA. OKC has more total first. Brooklyn has a lot of first as well. Houston has a lot of first. But like, I think San Antonio has the best quality of first. Not the best quantity, but the best quality. If the Spurs make you the best offer, you have to take that offer. And by the way, for all the reasons that you may want to trade De'Aaron Fox, the shaky shooting ability, the aloof defense, the lack of leadership, that could become a problem for the Spurs. It could. Like, just because on paper it could work for the Spurs, maybe that ends up being the reason why the Spurs aren't at the level that they could be. Maybe Fox ends up being the wrong bet for the Spurs. So I think for the Kings, you can't worry about where he goes. It's all about just getting the best offer, if it comes to that. But then again, maybe they'll just trade for Brandon Ingram and Cam Thomas, and they'll make the play in, and they'll get eliminated in April, and it'll be a horrible year. Maybe that's what it'll be. But I hope it's not that. I hope it's not that. They're currently three games back from the Spurs. Speaking of the Spurs, for the 10 seed, keep your freaking pick. Tank. Cooper Flagg is in here. I mean, like, come on. Tank. You have a top 10 protected pick. Tank. This is so obvious what they should be doing.
Hot mess. Hot mess. Damn. In Sacktown, man.
Oh, man. Jesus. God, it's frustrating. But, I mean, what I feel is nothing like what Kings fans feel. Because what a story, man. 20 years of nothing, and then you have the best year of your life, and then it's, like, declined ever since then. Yeah, too bad. Dan, appreciate you joining me today.
Yes, sir, man. Hey, hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be better things for Sacramento. And just to call back to the top, when I was asking you how you feeling after your loss, I was talking fantasy because your boy is still sitting at 8-1. Oh, you're still in second place. You're still looking nice, yeah. But you know it's going to be hard for you to come for the guy over here. But
I don't know why my mind went to the Patriots, but I'm actually feeling good after that loss. After my loss to you, I'm just pissed off. That you added Scoot Henderson, who did nothing, and then he has a massive week for you with Chauncey Billups, man, out for two games. Billups gone, Scoot Henderson's here, and I dropped DiVincenzo for his two monster games, and I would have won if I kept him. Yeah, so Dan and I faced off in our Yahoo Work League in fantasy basketball, and I lost by 55 points.
Oof.
And I had dropped DiVincenzo, and if I had kept him, I win, and I'm 8-1 at the top. Instead, I'm in second place. Not so bad, but
not so bad. I'll see you in the playoffs.
Yeah, I hope I don't see you in the playoffs with your juggernaut team led by fantasy real life losers, fantasy winners. That's your team. Jordan Poole, Julius Randle. God, sickening watching your team.
Isn't it? Oh man, it's so disgusting watching me win. I know.
That's why you do what you do. Oh my God. I just pulled up your team. DeMontis Sabonis, Jordan Poole, Julius Randle.
Oh, Poole, hot garbage.
A team wins 25 games in the NBA.
Oh man.
But you're in first by a lot in points in our work league. By a lot. But hey, that's why you do what you do.
Yes, sir. Where
people find your stuff, Dan?
Yeah, find me on Twitter at Dan Titus and Blue Sky, all that, Instagram. Drop the playlist every Monday, and then also Roto World Basketball Show every Wednesday. So tap in.
Appreciate it, Dan. Up next, we're talking Pistons with Bryce Simon. Joining me now is Bryce Simon from the Pistons Pulse podcast. Bryce, the Pistons, 14 wins on the season with 18 losses. Last year, 14 wins, 68 losses. Cade Cunningham, Pistons fans have been talking about him. Maybe he's an all-star. He's taking the leap. He's averaging 24 points, 9.7 assists, 6.7 rebounds per game. Is Cade's progress the number one difference between last year's 14 and 68 Pistons and this year's 14 and 18 Pistons?
I mean, when you match your win total from the year before, I don't think there's one single thing that we can point to. There's a lot of things, and I'm sure we'll talk about a few of those. But if I had to put something at the top of the list, it would be Cade Cunningham's growth. He truly has been better this year. And I don't know how much we want to dive into this, but on both ends of the floor. Like, he still has some flaws on the defensive end, but he has been much better, much more engaged, especially on the ball defensively. But on the offensive end, I think this is the Cade Cunningham that he wants to be. And I have no firsthand knowledge of that, but I didn't think he wanted to be like, try to go score 30 a night. I think the way he's distributing the basketball, because hey, when you put floor spacers around Cade Cunningham, it looks pretty good. Who knew? He is able to do that along with the scoring that we have seen.
I mean, you mentioned the like the floor spacing aspect with him. The funny thing with him is like he has himself been better as a shooter as well. This season, he's shooting 36.7% on 4.2 dribble jumper threes per game, up from 30.6% on 2.1 dribble jumper threes per game in his prior years in the NBA. So he's taking more threes off the dribble than he ever has before, and he's making more than he ever has before. So he's improved himself as a shooter. Has that been the biggest area of growth for him offensively, or how much has the other shooting on the floor helped him as well?
I think it has been in terms of just his individual growth along with the playmaking. I don't think he was getting the love for the playmaker he is when guys simply weren't making shots or the lane was just so congested that he couldn't even get there. There are some things he's still got to improve, right? Like for him to be elite, he's got to figure out either the rim finishing or getting to the foul line. But him being able to knock down jumpers off the dribble, especially off a ball screen, means defenders can't do what? They can't go under the screen. You go under a ball screen with Cade Cunningham, now he can get to the mid-range, he can draw help, he can spray to shooters, he can throw to the lob, whether it's Durin or whoever. It opens up every part of his game when he has the three-point jumper going, specifically, as you mentioned, off the dribble.
Yeah, I mean, like they add Malik Beasley. He's been awesome for the Pistons this year. Tobias Harris, get him back as well. And I mean, he's okay. He's Tobias Harris, doing more Tobias Harris things. But the fact is like having these guys who can't shoot, you know, has given him more space to playmake, and 9.7 assists per game. He's racking up potential assists. Like you said, teammates are converting more of those potential assists into actual assists more often for him. Do you feel like with Cade, like, here's my thought. Like you mentioned the at rim finishing or the foul drawing. He still doesn't get to the free throw line a lot. He doesn't get like a all-star whistle. But at the same time, the at-rim finishing is still the thing that I look at with Cade, and I'm like, is he more of like a number one or number two? And I still look at him, even this season, as great as he's been, I worry he's still more of a number two when it comes to like championship-level play without that at-rim finishing or without that foul drawing. Because even with the spacing, that still hasn't developed.
And I'm sure we'll talk about Jaden Ivey, but I also want to make sure I get in there. Jaden Ivey's catch and shoot three-pointer has been really good this year as well to add to that spacing. To answer that question specifically, I've said since day one, I thought Cade Cunningham would be the best player on the Pistons when they were truly competitive. Like right now they're fun and they compete and, you know, they're fun to watch, but they're not competitive, right? Like they're not really a playoff team. I thought he would be the face of the franchise, but I didn't think he'd be the number one scorer. Now, I think we could have a bigger conversation of how does that work in today's NBA? Can your quote unquote best player not be your leading scorer? I've always thought he would need I would call it the number two, but a scoring option next to him that could go get 25 a night and that be that person's role, where Cade can be this more all around scorer, distributor, clutch bucket maker, and defense, as I mentioned, and defender. And here's the other thing. You know what else has jumped up this year? Is his rebounding. Now it's ticked down just a little bit over the last handful of games, but he at one point was like over 9.5 assists and 7.5 rebounds, KOC. Like it was all around game.
Yeah, and I think with Cade, like the defensive aspect, like the other night he's defending Lowry, he defended KD this year. Like he's been really good defensively. Like I think individually better than he has ever been before, in my opinion. But like that's an interesting like philosophical point you're bringing up with the Pistons. Like, can your number one not be the leading scorer? But yeah, he's like a great defender, and he's leading the league in assists, and he's making clutch shots and all that. Maybe, but like Jaden Ivey isn't taking that leap next to him, which is why like it's still on Cade. It's still like on him to have to do that. And, you know, looking at the numbers this season, Cade is making 54.3% of his unassisted restricted area chances. So think about that as like his drives to the basket, unassisted chances, 54.3% of the top 25 players with the most unassisted at-rim chances. That's 24th in field goal percentage ahead of only Tyrese Maxey. And for Cade, that number's down from 60% over his first three seasons, which is like below average compared to other numbers. Just for reference, SGA this season, 72%. Fox, 67%. Anthony Edwards, 64%. Jaylen Brown, 63% for like similar type or sized players. So Cade is still way on the lower end of that. And that's despite improved spacing. And that's why I'm curious, Bryce, and your evaluation. You played college ball, you're a coach as well. And when you evaluate Cade, how much of his at-rim struggles is a matter of, you know, a function of lack of spacing versus something with his technique? Like, what is playing into the fact that he's near the bottom end of at-rim finishing for these higher volume guys?
I think one of the first things that people bring up is the athleticism, right? Like nobody scouted Cade coming out of Oklahoma State and thought he was this unbelievable athlete. Like he's functional enough, right? Like I don't want people to freak out. I'm not saying he's a below the rim finisher. He's had poster dunks, but he's not that level of vertical pop guy. He has gotten stronger. I think increased strength is one thing that would be huge for him. Continue to be able to play through contact. I will say my biggest like thing with Cade every game I watch, especially offensively, is I feel like he has this lack of like intensity is the best word I could use. And it contributes to his misses at the rim and his turnovers. And there was one specifically in the last few games, he like beat his defender off the bounce and then kind of just casually did a layup line layup and it got blocked from behind. It's like, Cade, these are NBA level athletes. These are NBA level rim protectors. You have to know, you have to reverse or decel, draw contact, something. It's like he doesn't like account for who he's playing against sometimes and what they are able to do and accomplish on the defensive end.
I mean, that's a good point because Cade's like so cool. Like yes. He's just chill. Yeah.
Yeah. In a negative way, like around here.
It
at
could
my
be
high
a negative
school.
Way.
Oh, it could be. Because like we call cool kids a negative thing around here, like at high school, the kids
is
I coach.
Is that really
like,
a thing in high school? Yeah. Cool
so
kids?
No, like we say you don't be a cool guy. Okay. A cool guy is one that won't dive on the floor. A cool guy is somebody that won't charge. Okay,
cool kids are lame. Those cool kids are not cool. I don't want those cool kids on my team.
Yes. So anyway, but I don't think Cade is very reserved in the way he plays the game. I just wonder if it sometimes the Nuggets game the other night, Russ got him a couple times just because Russ plays so intense and Cade got by him. And then it's like, oh, I have him beat. Well, no, Russ isn't going to give up on the play. He's coming from behind to get a back tip or something. I don't know that like Cade always feels that and continues to play intense even after he's beat his man.
Now, the other day, Krishna Narsu, who does some stuff over at B-Ball Index, advanced stat stuff, he ripped on Cade Cunningham over on X, and a lot of Pistons fans were understandably very mad at Krishna. But I'm curious about your thoughts, Bryce, on this post he made. He said, among the 58 players with a usage rate over 25, Cade is 48th in turnovers per 100 touches. By contrast, Luka is 31st, Jokic is 8th. He's around where Harden is. And he also says the Pistons are only 3 points per 100 possessions better offensively with Cade on the court versus off the court. Where do you fall, you know, in kind of that debate amongst Pistons fans and evaluators with Cade's turnovers? How much of that is a function of him specifically with kind of that attitude, that approach you're talking about versus like, no, this is, you're overrating this turnover thing. Like turnovers are part of when you have the ball in your hands a lot.
No. This is probably my biggest area of growth for Cade. Like, okay. I think he's made the jump with the 3-point jumper. I think his passing, which is kind of funny, right? We're talking about his passing, but turnovers, his defense has improved. Like, Cade has been incredible this year. And I think he's at least in an all-star conversation if Detroit continues to win. The turnovers are frustrating. I mean, I do my Substack. If anybody wants to get Pistons content, they can, you know, subscribe. Shameless self plug here. I also write notes about their opponents. Motor City Hoops Substack, whoever they play, I leave notes about that as well. It's just my raw scout notes. But a lot of times my notes will be very positive, and then there's a section of, why is he so nonchalant? He's got to be more intense. You can't be that loose with the ball. You got to know the defenders there. Those are the things that are still frustrating.
Can these guys, like, how often is it that, oh, nonchalant player, oh, if only he was more of a badass.
Sure.
How often, like, do these nonchalant guys become badasses? That's where, like, as good as things are right now with Pistons, as good as things are with Cade right now, I'm like, damn, like, maybe he's just going to be one of those guys who's missing that piece to be that top 10 level guy someday in the future.
That's what's scary is, we've seen this, like, it's hard to thread the needle of going from, okay, they're making a jump from awful yes. to not embarrassing, right? And like, I don't mean
to say, jump to make. A lot of teams are awful forever.
That's true. But like, they were so, like, the coaching change and all of that, like, they were going to be better this year. The next jump, like, to thread the needle of real contender is so, so hard. And what's scary about Cade is this is year four. Now, he missed a whole year. He had a year of complete debacle of what last season was. Like, that's the one thing I want to say is, like, you can't simultaneously say last year was a disaster and crush Monty Williams and not give these players a little bit of slack that they were a part of that infrastructure of whatever last year was in Detroit. But it's still year four, and we're seeing some of the same issues with the turnovers, with the the rim finishing numbers you gave is what is concerning. Like, why is it not getting better when he has gotten a little stronger, when he has seemingly been able to see NBA level rim protectors and not figure it out? So we're talking about taking a jump from what, a top 30 player to a top, like, all-star level player to all NBA level player. And Detroit absolutely needs him to at least be all NBA level eventually.
And part of it is, like, he does need somebody to pop alongside him.
I mean,
you guys draft Ron Holland this year. You have Ausar Thompson from last year, Jaden Ivey from the year before that. Ivey is now 22 years old, averaging 17.4 points per game, 39.2% from three, both career highs. But he's still only 6'4", still only 195 pounds. He's still not a high volume shooter. He's still undersized. I look at this Pistons future, especially after drafting Thompson and Hall in the last 2 years, and I don't see how Ivy's, like, part of the piece of the puzzle with this group.
Listen, I love Jaden Ivey. I've been a huge supporter and, like, defender of Jaden Ivey in the Pistons realm because he takes a lot of heat. And I think he's a very good basketball.
What do people give him heat for? Just for context for people who are non-Pistons fans. Like, why are they giving him heat?
The defense hasn't been as good. It's gotten better, but the defense early on was a big part of it. Then it was the shooting. That's gotten better. And now it's what you're talking about. Cade needs a Robin or maybe a Batman. You know, like, they need the number two. Pistons fans are ready for it because you're getting a taste of winning. And it's like, well, is J.I. going to be that or not? And he was, you know, a top five pick. And sometimes he shows it. He's just been very inconsistent. He'll have three games where it's like, man, you can see it. Efficiency. He hits the gate. He's had two game winners, I think, this year. A little floater on the baseline against the Raptors. Yeah, he attacked Ochai. And then the one against the Kings the other night where he got fouled and hit the and-1 three. But then he'll have games where it's not consistent. The decision-making isn't great. And sometimes the process is great, and sometimes it gets completely lost. I think what Pistons fans see, and I wonder if it isn't, maybe you could tell me this. Who's the last top five pick that ended up being the sixth man on the team that drafted them?
I mean, I can't think of
it. It probably hasn't happened, right? And so
When you're a top five guy, like, the expectation is that you become one of the guys, not a six man.
And that's why I love the idea of that. But I'm like, does that really happen with Detroit if that's what he ends up being? And if they end up needing to upgrade him, does he move to the bench and become the player in that role? Or does it actually end up happening for him on another team?
I wish it could happen because, like, in theory, like, let's say Ausar Thompson and Ron Holland continue ascending. They become more than just, like, these defensive energizers who turning defense into offense. Cause they, like, Holland already, Thompson already, they can do that. Let's say they become reliable shooters and they can attack closeouts, and Ron Holland can run an occasional pick and roll, and Ausar Thompson is a connective piece and all these things, right? All that happens. Well, then you're too small if you have Thompson and Holland and Ivy and Cade and you're starting four of your starting five. It's too small. Somebody needs to come off the bench and be somebody who's, like, playing heavy minutes without Cade or without some of those guys on the floor. Ivy's that logical choice, but that would require him to be, like, cool. I'm happy being Manu Ginobili, a Hall of Fame six man. Like, you still could be a finisher in a lot of games. Like, he's still going to be a guy that's relied on to hit those clutch shots, which he's proven he can. But it's I think it's really hard to expect a guy to accept that role, especially all the money that's out there. You want to get those big touches. You want to get that opportunity, and you want to be the guy when you've always been the guy.
And I would love for him to do that. Like, I would love for it to happen because I do love watching J.I., and he has an incredible first step and some of the stuff he can do. I think the other thing is, if Asar and Ron end up being the wings on this team, you got to go get a bucket getter. Like, the third wing, like, if Cade, your point, your primary initiator, those are two of your wings. And we can talk about the center position whenever you're ready. You got to go get...
Jalen Duren is talking about disappointments.
He is at the top of the Pistons. Every year the Pistons fan base picks somebody, it's JD this year. Like, he's the one that's getting the brunt of it. So real quick to finish that, you're probably going to need a better scorer than what J.I. is right now. And that it sucks because, again, I love him and his game.
Would
and
you
what
trade
he does.
Him?
Right now?
Yeah.
No. Here's my thought on the Pistons right now.
What would you trade him for? You say no, but, you know, I'm calling you. You're the Pistons GM, and I'm like, I want Ivy. You don't even want picks. There's not type of player that you'd want. There's
not nothing. Unless he's part of the guy we're talking about. Like, not unless he's to go get the upgrade, the super boosted wing bucket getter. Here's what I would not do if I was Detroit. I would not make any rash decisions till the offseason. Because here's the thing. What if they end up with the top three pick? Like, what if they do win the lottery? Like, you know, we joke about them having the worst record and falling to five. What if they have the seventh worst record and jump to one or, whatever. I would not make rash moves if I was Trajan Langdon until I know I have all the data points I can get on JD, JI, even Asar and Ron, and I know where my draft pick is. Because if I can get, I don't know where you're at with some of these guys, but Cooper or Ace or whoever, that's going to change what I need to do in terms of going and making a trade for a big name.
Do you think it could work with Dylan Harper and Cade Cunningham if it's Dylan Harper?
I think so. I think so. Cade has started to play a little bit more off the ball. Dylan has shot the ball better than what I thought. Like, that was one of my questions with him. I love Dylan Harper's game. And so that would be a little bit interesting to me. There would be still a size thing there, but it would be Ace is the one that makes the most sense. But then you got to wait on Ace as well.
He's so young and raw.
So exactly. So yeah. That's the other part is like, okay, if Cade's ready now, do you want to wait? Or do you package these guys to go get somebody that's more ready now? So I would still wait till the offseason, though. I want to see Jay again. Chaos, we watched this team be a dumpster fire last year. I'm sorry, but I'm throwing that out in terms of these guys' development. And that's why I've been a little bit more patient with Jalen Duren than some of the rest of the fan base.
I mean, you mentioned keeping the pick. Is there any part of you that would be willing to trade away the pick? Because I look at this year's draft class and, you know, Cooper Flagg can fit anywhere. But even with him, with Cade and the Pistons, like, the shot needs to come along. Ace Bailey, super raw. Dylan Harper, iffy fit. You already have a ton of ball handlers and the size aspect. And there's nobody else that I'm looking at and I'm like, ah, that's the guy. For the Pistons, like, that's my dream player next to Cade and Asar and all these guys. Like, there's nobody in this draft class for the Pistons standpoint that I feel that way. It's a weird draft in that yes. sense for Detroit specifically.
Yeah, agreed 100%. And so that's when, if you get to the offseason, why trade something now when, hey, we have the third pick plus JI gets us that super boosted wing bucket getter, whoever it is, right? Like, I'm going to throw out a name. Please don't, like, nobody aggregate this. It's just the idea of Zach LaVine healthy. The ideal version of Zach LaVine is who I envision next to Cade. Like, that's what I envision. Like, a floor spacer that can be a volume scorer. Like, that's what I see as that third wing next to Holland and Asar. Because here's the other thing. You know what that guy gets to do defensively? He gets to guard the fourth best player on the other team. Because Ron, Asar, and Cade are taking 1, 2, and 3. Can I ask you a philosophical question about the Pistons?
Go ahead.
What are your thoughts about, like, a Zach LaVine type player just being the bridge to the long-term answer? Like, if you agreed with me that archetype is what they need, what is your thoughts about just getting Zach LaVine-ish, even if it's just for a couple years until you find the long-term answer? Do you think that's good philosophically?
I mean, I think you got to have something competent out in the court, and LaVine, his scoring ability, the bucket getting ability, it makes sense as a placeholder. He's almost 30 at this point, so he's not necessarily part of the, you know, the Cade timeline. He makes sense. It's just, he makes so much freaking money. Like, do I want to like take up so much of my cap space on LaVine? But on the other hand, you need to pay somebody. It's just, if you're paying one guy that much money, that could really limit your flexibility to make other moves. Cause like, that's one thing like the Pistons do have right now, is like, they have flexibility to make moves. It's just like, to get a Zach LaVine, you're needing to give up Tobias Harris, who will be expiring next year, Hardaway, who's expiring this year, got like these salaries that you could piece together into the guy at some point. Maybe you can't get the guy in a couple of years if it's LaVine. So I'm on the fence, because on one hand, I want to be a bit more competitive. But on the other hand, I it's tough, man, because like, the Pistons have sucked for a long time. You know, and it's like, you can't suck forever and talk about, oh, get draft odds, when Cade's going to be getting paid $50 million at the end of the decade. So, but I think LaVine makes some sense. I do. I'm not sure if he's the ideal, but he makes some sense. To me, here's my concern. My concern with it, you have LaVine. Let's say the Pistons have LaVine or a LaVine-like player, and they have Cade, and they have Ron Holland, and they have Ausar Thompson. That is still like a lean team. And to have a team that lean, you need a big. And like, who is that elite rim protecting big that can also shoot threes? Like, that guy just, with that roster construct, that's a lot of pressure on Cade to continue improving as a spot up shooter, on Ausar and Holland to prove themselves as shooters, and to find a five that can protect the rim and space the floor. I don't know. It's a tough fit, man. I have a hard time with that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. Miles Turner is the name. Like, Pistons fans are drooling over the idea of Miles Turner this offseason as an unrestricted
free agent.
He's a free
agent, correct? Yes.
Yeah, unrestricted.
Miles Turner is interesting. He'd be very interesting for Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I like the idea. Can they execute it? I don't know. Again, for what it's worth, I would play out this season. Here's my problem. I don't know. Maybe it's not a problem. I'm not a lifelong Pistons fan, as I told you. And so I have much more patience with all of this. Like, I watch the team, obviously. I break the team down. I've watched every second for the last five seasons. This is my fifth season doing it. But I don't have like this like love for the team that a lot of fans do. And so I found myself being a little more patient with like, hey, let's let this play out. I want data. I want more like data. With Ivy. And sometimes to my detriment as an evaluator of the team.
Pistons fans are like, I want to go back to the arena and be chanting Detroit. Yes. Basketball.
Yes. Yes. I'm only fanatic about one team, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. The Pistons, I love watching them. I'm only irrational about the Chiefs. That's the only sporting team I get irrational about.
Well, I mean, we mentioned the center position a couple of times with Jalen Duren. Boy, I was looking back before our pod today at my NBA draft scouting report of him. And on the pluses side, I think some of this is true. Elite upside as a shot blocker, 7'5" wingspan, nimble, can occasionally defend the perimeter, blah, 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 blah. Minuses, off ball defense, he still needs to improve his awareness. He sometimes gets caught ball watching, occasionally struggles with simple things such as boxing out or falling into foul trouble. He needs to cut down on his physical and mental lapses so that his skills and athleticism can fuse. I feel like all of that's still true. It's just, I feel like he's worse. In some ways. Is that fair to say? It's just, it's weird. I feel like he's regressed since his rookie season in a lot of aspects. What's went wrong with Jalen Duren's development?
So I think it's one of those things where there just hasn't been a lot of development. The rebounding actually has stayed like somewhat in the middle throughout all of this. But when he comes in as a rookie and averages all these rebounds, you're like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is amazing. Look at this rookie averaging, you know, how many I was at per 36. You know, he was averaging 9 and 9. Last year, he was at 14 and 11 and a half. And it's like, this is awesome. And then you realize, especially when you're talking about a team that really needs to compete, you got to have a defensive anchor of some sort. And that's where the development just hasn't come. And the other issue is,
But he's why not? Of, like, is he like, what? Why hasn't the defensive anchoring developed for him? Is it mental? Like, is he?
I don't think he does
the floor.
Yeah, I don't think he does the little things. Like, if you watch him in ball screen, I've tried to point out when it does happen in the positive aspects. You know, like, I'm big on, like, watch Nikola Jokic. Watch his hands when he's defending a ball screen. Like, Jokic is not the most athletic dude, but his hands in the pocket passing window. Then his hands are up taking away the lob. Heck, he kicks the ball if he can't get his hands there and he doesn't want to bend over to get it there, right? Like, he just finds a way to be in the... I don't know that JD understands the positioning and how important hand activity is. Like, the other thing is, like, a sense of urgency. I don't know how many stretch bigs have taken wide open catch and Nikola Vucevic was the most frustrating game because it's like he's shooting 45% from three. You have to know that him and Jalen Smith are trailing in transition. You have to close out. You can't defend them the same way you do non-floor spacing big. It happened with Jokic the other night. Again, shooting like almost 50% from three and the hand isn't even there on the contest. And so it's just like those little things of, and then here's the thing, he's not an elite rim protector. So you can't even say, well, at least he gets us 2.5 blocks a game or is, you know, really, I don't think he changes offensive players' minds when they drive. Like, right, when we talk about Victor Wembanyama, beyond the blocks, it's, you can see offensive players' minds change when they see him. Jalen Duren does not have that effect. So he doesn't have that. He's not doing the little things. And offensively, it's kind of just offensive rebound and lob finishes.
I've given up. I'm out. I'm out on him. I saw the upside. Like, I saw the appeal, obviously. He's a lottery pick, and he's huge. He's got the muscles. He's got the long-ass arms. He's a vertical guy. But it's just, it's all... theoretical. It's just all theoretical. It's just not there. I don't think he has it between the ears.
So what I've said recently is I would actually put him on the bench for a week. I'd say, JD, you need some time. I want you to sit on the bench. I want you to watch. I would start Paul Reed because
Paul Reed, talk about hustle.
Here's his stock numbers are incredible right now. It's crazy. But and it kind of really highlights what JD struggles with when Paul Reed comes in and blitzes a ball screen and gets a deflection. I don't want Isaiah Stewart to start because then the fan base will hate him again because Isaiah Stewart's not a starting big. He's a pretty good backup big. I would just wonder what would happen if you said, JD, go set for a week. We want you to watch. We want you to learn. We want you to take in the game from the sideline, even perfectly healthy.
Here's what happens. I demand a trade.
This is the high school coach talking, having no understanding of like NBA egos.
Get me out of here. I want out. JB Bickerstaff, F you.
Yes. Either fire JB or trade me right now and my agent is on the phone. That's the aspect of this I don't consider. I just look at it from a coach's perspective. So I know it's not like rational and something that can actually happen, but something has to switch. Like something has to. And it straight up hasn't. Like it just has not.
It's disappointing because the idea of him made a hell of a lot of sense.
Yes.
For Detroit. He really did.
I loved him. I was like, I thought there was real like passing upside. Like maybe he could face up and do some things. The rim protection. Like I thought he was going to be really, really good. And it hasn't progressed the way you would want to see.
You know, it's like I say I'm out. I'm out for the Pistons. I just don't think it's going to work in Detroit. But if he gets traded to some other team in 3 years from now when he's a little bit older, maybe. Maybe it can work out. To me, he's just going to be that second team or third team guy. It's just not going to happen in Detroit. The issue is, even if you're out, well, okay, who's your replacement? Who are you going to bring in?
They have three backup centers, maybe like 2.5, you know, depending. So, and you know this as a draft person, this is why, like, I think sometimes people get mad at people that do draft for like, well, he's young or whatever. It's like, this is what teams have to consider. If Jalen Duren was very young, maybe some immaturity, maybe some motor things, and there's a chance when you draft that guy, you may not get the payoff because they're still 22 at the end of their rookie deal and still haven't progressed with those things. And then you get to watch somebody else get the payoff.
And then you get to pay him still after 4 years.
Yeah,
so many guys are not ready. They still have the same pre-draft concerns, and then they get paid anyway, and the concerns continue. You on.
Yes. And so that's where it's like, okay, this is why we talk about age and maturity and how long it's going to take and those type of things, because NBA teams have to factor that stuff in when you're talking about the assets and the resource. And as you mentioned, the money it takes to keep them on your roster.
And I think the thing that's I mean, we'll see how the year continues, but there's no one big in this draft class. Like we mentioned, how there's no clear cut guy.
Yeah.
If the Pistons move into the top four, there's nobody that I'm like, besides Cooper for Detroit. Even if they stick to like the 10, 11 spot, there's really no big there that I'm like, okay, perfect fit. Here's your, you don't need to sign Miles Turner. You can just draft this guy instead. There's nobody in this year's draft class that's like a clear cut lottery big.
No, I'm with you. Like, I love Common coming into the year, and it just hasn't like materialized the way I thought it was going to be. And even if you did want to take him, that's you're
waiting.
Projecting out multiple years. The guys I like are kind of second round backup bigs. But again, like we just said, the Pistons have plenty of backup bigs. They don't need another second unit big or something like that. So I'm with you with this draft in terms of the bigs.
I think I would take Malawach though. If I had to just take a swing at number 10, I mean, 7-footer who's flashed the ability to shoot threes. Like I'm swinging for the fences if he's there at number 10 or 11 and saying, screw it. If he busts, if he doesn't, well, hey, maybe we found our very rare center who can protect the rim and shoot threes. It's just, he's very raw and
very you have raw
to wait for him too, as Duke knows right now.
Yep, exactly. So it's, like you said, it's an interesting draft and specifically for the Pistons, you know, as you start to look at guys that would make sense. Yeah, I like some guys on the wing, but it's like, do you need to add just another wing that's not a high upside bucket getter like Ace is or something like that? Or can you afford to wait on Ace Bailey to become that guy?
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how the year continues. Still a long way to go. We're not even in January yet as we record this. By the end of March, if Duke's in the Final Four and Malawach is awesome and thriving, he might be looking like a guy that you have to win the lottery for in the top four in order to get him, because things can change damn fast in the NBA draft world. And it's still super early at this point. Things are very, 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 very fluid with everybody's rankings in the league and evaluators like us. Bryce, appreciate you coming on the show today, man. Where can people find your stuff? Plug all you want.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll go shameless now. So at Motor City Hoops on Twitter, X, whatever, on Blue Sky, I'm over there now as well. I talked about the Substack. Again, it's my notes and analysis of the game. It's just raw notes. It's not paragraph form. So check it out. See if you like the way I format it or not. And again, if your favorite team plays the Pistons, I leave notes on them. The Pistons Pulse podcast, if you want a Pistons podcast, I feel like we're one of the best. And then I am on Game Theory with Sam Vecenie talking NBA and NBA draft. And I can't thank you enough for having me on. Like whenever I got your DM, I was like, I immediately told my wife, I was like, babe, I just got like one of the coolest requests ever to go on a podcast. Like this is a big time opportunity. So I thank you so much, truly. And I had a blast.
Well, I appreciate you. Come on, Bryce. You do great work covering the Pistons. You're great with Sam as well. I really enjoy your stuff. And I really enjoyed this conversation with you too, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Bryce and Dan for joining me on today's episode. Thanks to Stone for producing, and thanks to you for giving us a listen. We'll be back again later in the week with Tom Haverstraw talking about our 2025 NBA predictions. As I said earlier on, hit me up, KOCshow@yahoosports.com. Send in your predictions for the NBA in 2025. We'll read some of those on the show on Friday. Have a good one. Enjoy your week. Happy New Year.